First Baptist Church, and I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat being vacated by Jim Bridenstine, Kevin Hearn, first of all, joining us by telephone. Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you this week.
And I think as we look at the 1st District seat, I'll remind the listeners that, yes, the normally scheduled election isn't until November of next year, but until the possibility of that NASA appointment for Jim Bridenstine is resolved one way or the other, I get the opportunity to talk to people like you running that I have already said they plan to run for that office. Obviously, the filing period isn't until next year, but the filing period is short, and whether it is a special election for an early appointment for Jim Bridenstine or his, previously announced fact that he's not going to run again next year, it's a good opportunity to get the information out there as we talk politics this morning. And you come at things from the standpoint of a businessman, and I think that is particularly important that we talk about that as far as who you are and your stance on some of the issues.
Thanks, Charlie. Yes, I think we're seeing right now one of the biggest issues that we have in our government today is the high deficits, and it's adding to our debt every year. And when you look at a lot of what's being paid out, we have about 100 million people not working today out of 325 million population. So if you truly believe that job creation in and of itself from an economic standpoint is important, as we're seeing with President Trump and what he's doing every day to try to bring manufacturing, keep manufacturing in America, keep the middle class jobs. And then that's my narrative. I've been creating jobs for over 20 years. Actually worked for myself for over 20 years now, signing both sides of the paycheck. So all of the conversations that are going on today about Obamacare and about the delay in getting the tax policy fixed and immigration reform, and the issues around the labor laws, all of the narrative that President Trump and the House and the Senate are dealing with right now, I live every day, as well as all the other, certainly the small business people in America live with every day. And I just think I'm a great voice for that, having dealt with it, as opposed to just reading it in the paper.
Exactly. And I heard a report yesterday, I think it was on CBS, but I'll say one of the broadcast networks, having to do with the $15 minimum wage in states like Washington and Oregon and some of the other states that have already enacted that $15 wage. And what the net effect appears to be that some of the employees that the employers are getting for that $15 wage, they say they seem to be getting better than just the minimum wage type worker, people coming in with better qualifications. And other than that, employers have done what business is good at doing. When a cost of doing business rises, they find a way to work around that cost, and they're doing with fewer employees or employees working fewer hours as a result of that $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, Charlie, I think it's a misrepresentation to think that the service employment International Union, the SEIU, cares more about our individual employees than we do. As a small business owner, your most valuable asset are your employees. Without employees, you can have the greatest ideas in the world, but you have to get this idea deployed, and you do that through a great, productive workforce. And you want to pay them a free enterprise, free capital market approach wage that's conducive to be competitive in your marketplace with your economic model. In the service industry, which is known, it's been this way for a few years now, is the fastest growing industry in America.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we've lost so many manufacturing jobs through globalization to foreign countries and through crazy trade deals that we have. That, when you look at the economic model that most industries have, you can't afford to do that. And because it's not just what you pay your employee, it's all the downstream, all your suppliers, all of the people that touch that small business have to up their ante as well. And one might argue, even President Obama argued for a 10-10 wage that he moved all the federal employees to, and he was saying that is 725 when it was last introduced, that if you did a cost of living adjustment, that's about where it would have been when he made the federal wage, minimum wage for federal employees at 10-10.
Mm-hmm.
So arbitrarily, 15 is just a good marketing idea for the unions. It's really about having enough flexibility so that the individual service workers can pay union dues, Because if it were truly about the employee, why wouldn't they advocate for $25 or $30 or $40 now?
Well, I guess you have a point there. I mean, I think it's any employee's privilege, I guess, to ask for whatever they think their time and effort is worth. On the other hand, it's also the owner's privilege to say, I don't think that job was worth that much, so I guess you got to meet somewhere in the middle.
Well, I think it's one more indication where the federal government, as they, you know, federal minimum wage, really just totally disregards the federal, the free market approach. You know, if you look at $15 an hour, you just referenced Seattle. You know, New York is the same way; it's actually exceeding that. Mm-hmm. In Southern California markets are. San Francisco is another classic example. Southern California, and you know, it's crazy what you see happening in those marketplaces. Just tremendous overregulation on an industry and industries that don't have menu flexibility or pricing flexibility to offset those costs. And when you're already working on a very thin margin, you're going to lose businesses on a broader scale. Or at the very minimum, you're going to stop growth of jobs. And what you're seeing in Seattle, as you referenced, is you actually saw a loss of jobs in the last few years, a loss of hours being worked. So to your point, free market will work that out. But it should be that we have everybody winning in this, meaning the employees, the employers, and society as a whole growing the economy, not having people not work. Because the question once, you know, if that article would have carried its message on out to the University of Washington, is what are these folks doing if they're not working that many hours? How are they making up for that difference? Are they getting government subsidies now because they can't make that difference up? It wasn't a complete story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm not sure that this was, I believe, a employer survey as opposed to an analysis. I don't remember the entire storyline of that. But, yeah, there's more to the story, as Paul Harvey would say. We need more information to get the full picture, and I'm sure it will come out over the next several months probably. This was a recently released this week study, I think, from the university.
Well, there are several analysis being done. As I've mentioned to you and your listeners in the past, for the last 5 years, I served as the chief financial officer for all the McDonald's franchisees in the country, so I had the opportunity, the privilege, if you will, to see all these different policies play out across the different municipalities and states across the country, whether it be New York, Chicago, Cook County, or whether it be Seattle proper, San Francisco, state of California as a whole, what that's done. And, you know, in the state of Oklahoma, we have preemption so that no locale, no city, municipality can change their minimum wage to something different than the state. So, you know, when you look at that, $15 an hour seems like a lot. What is a lot here? It's, you know, federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, mm-hmm. and so it's over double. But in New York, it's insignificant. And Seattle, it's insignificant. So, again, it's the federal government trying to play kingmaker for all of these things, much like it's done for Obamacare and what it's done for education policy. So, once again, it's, you know, bureaucrats in D.C. thinking they're smarter than the individual free market approach that this country built on.
Well, looking at what's going on in D.C. right now, certainly the legislative process continues, particularly in the Senate, when it comes to Obamacare and the repeal and replace effort there. And it appears as though right now they're making some progress, but the Republican Party is not unified in their approach as far as what they want to do, and I think each senator is probably coming at it with what is best for their state. Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, I know this is going to sound flippant, but it's about politics.
It is.
It's about getting votes. I think what everyone knows is that individuals, certainly to moderate to conservative individuals in America, and I would beg to say even people that are left of center, want the federal government out of their hair. And healthcare was the greatest overstep. This Obamacare was the greatest overstep of the federal government into each individual's household that we've ever seen. And because it was 2,700 pages and we had to pass it before we could know what was in there, what we're seeing is how complex and how many tentacles and roots are into the different areas in this country. And, you know, I think this House bill was 123 pages or so. The Senate bill is about a 146 or 147, whatever it is. Certainly something you can read overnight. But we're we're trying to undo a monstrosity. And the problem with most of the policies is we want it all or nothing. You know, the Democrats have been very good over the years of being just methodical in their approach. One might argue even back to the early 1900s, their methodical approach to becoming more populist in their thoughts, more liberal in their approach to policy, with what happened with the New Deal, with what happened with Johnson. And here we are, and we're trying to undo it with one fell swoop. And if we don't do it, then, you know, we must be doing something wrong. But the problem is that if we have any hope of doing this, we're going to have to do it in the current state of our majorities in the House and Senate and the White House. Because if we don't make a movement here, the very people that put President Trump into office and gave us a majority in both the House and Senate are going to start unwinding that, because they're going to lose all hope and faith. And if we don't get it done now through reconciliation, it'll be the last. It'll probably be impossible to do in the future. It'll be just, it'll be what the Nancy Pelosi wants, which is just tweaking it, because they will never get it come back up again. And so this is our last failed chance, a chance to fix this before it fails.
And, of course, because you're trying to do it with reconciliation and therefore a simple majority as opposed to a higher vote threshold, but you're also limited to what you can do, because reconciliation has to have something to do with how it affects the budget.
That's correct. And so, you know, as they're looking at this narrow window here, you know, one thing that most people, whether you like Mitch McConnell or not, is very savvy on the procedures of the Senate. And, you know, nobody puts, I'm sure, their best bill forward. I'm sure he still has some wiggle room, and that's what he's doing right now, trying to bring the folks who think it's not conservative enough, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee of the world, to those that are that thinks it goes overboard, like Keller of Nevada. So we've got to get that fixed, and I think we'll get there. We need to get 3 votes for the 5 to get the, you know, get to 50, so we get to break a tie with Vice President Pence.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It probably will be that that 51 vote with the Vice President casting his vote, if it makes it that far. We're talking with Kevin Hearn this morning, candidate for the 1st District House seat this morning on Community Connection. We'll continue in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Continuing our time this morning on the phone with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Kevin Hearn. And, Kevin, the Supreme Court came down on a couple of conservative opinions, the one even unanimous when it came to the president's right under the statute to enforce Homeland Security type issues.
You know, this is the one that's most amazing to, I think, most folks, especially people in Oklahoma, whether you're Democrat or Republican. You know, the fundamental principles outlined that the citizens gave the Constitution was to protect our people, to protect our rights, whether it's with our military or our borders, maintain our sovereignty. And when you have a president that's trying to protect us from at least the citizens that are, we think they're citizens, we don't have any other way of knowing, from 6 countries that are, that want to do us harm, from all indication, and he can't even do that. I think, you know, again, I hate to say it this way, but it's our judges playing politics. And, I think in this case, for sure, President Trump had every right to be infuriated and being able to accelerate to the Supreme Court. It was wonderful to see that we had a unanimous decision in that argument.
If anything, and there was not a dissenting opinion, but I'm saying if there would have been a dissenting opinion, it appears as though the more conservative justices would have been the dissent, saying no, actually he has the privilege to limit all the way through, and probably they think that the overall decision didn't go far enough.
You know, I think it's one indication of where President Trump is really getting some good advice on the Constitution, what he's trying to do, and he's really trying to represent all the people. And again, I think that's why you saw people cross over from the Democrats to vote for him, as well as people who hadn't voted in the past. It's refreshing to see someone that was really looking out for the people as opposed to some political gain or some financial gain from this office.
As this relates to the first district, trying to I guess can get it down to your candidacy, this is something you have in the past supported this viewpoint as far as one of the primary functions of government is law enforcement, is protecting the border. If you don't have a border, you don't have a country. But these are just some of the things that have become part of your basic operating philosophy as a candidate for the first district seat.
Yeah, you know, I've taken a long flight for this in support of President Trump on building the border wall. And it's not against any people in particular. It's really about the bad people that are coming across. It's their only safe haven, safe travel, rather, as that may sound a little bit strange since we have armed Border Patrol officers there. But, you know, it's very difficult for anybody that wants to harm us to come from an airport or from a cruise terminal. So now they're coming across the border. It's very well known. So that's one thing. The second thing is it's about the drugs. There was just an article the other day that was put out by the DEA, something like 100% of the heroin that, or 99% of the heroin that comes into America comes across the southern border, and 100% of the cocaine. And if you look at just the irreparable harm that illegal drugs, let's just talk about that right now. Illegal drugs has done to this country, the families in this country, the economics of the families in this country, what it's done to trying to find viable employees that have to be drug screened to come in. It's crazy. One number I read that said over $1 trillion has been spent in the last decade on illegal drug activity. So if you look at $100 billion a year, I'm pretty sure we can find in there enough money to secure our southern border. And, you know, as it relates to immigration, as some, you know, as the people in the immigration or in the service industry that hire immigrants as, you know, as unskilled workers, you know, we're in constant state of monitoring. And the requirement is by the federal government is all you have to do is verify, just see the documents for an I-9. But I will tell you, that is not enough. I've been doing e-verify, not required, but been doing e-verify since January 2011. And it's an extraordinary cost, but I think it's what we need to do to protect businesses as well as protect the rights of the people who are here legally so that they have jobs before we hire somebody illegally, which is easy to do if you're just going strictly by the government standards of verifying I-9s, because the business owner is not required to go validate whether that's a valid driver's license or social security number, and most people wouldn't. Don't understand that. At the very minimum, those folks are paying Social Security, and that's the argument that the Democrats have, is that if you take the illegal immigrants out of the country, that there's going to be, you know, they already paying the Social Security, but they don't get anything back from it. Well, that's sort of a false argument as well, because there's also a subsidy that goes on to folks that are here illegally that are not getting paying into Social Security. So we just have to fix it. I don't think we'll ever get a proper immigration policy put in place until we fix our southern border, whether it's a physical wall, whether it's a technology-driven virtual wall where the river sits right on the border. But until we get that done, I don't think we'll ever see an immigration policy that works where we can bring people out of the fold of cash-only working to pay in taxes and reap the benefits of this system, which is why they came here. They came here because of two factions. Or two factors, rather. One is because they wanted safety for their family. And the second was they're looking for prosperity. They actually are looking for the American dream, to come here and come out of a poverty-stricken area into an area where they have opportunity. If they work hard, they don't take anything from the government, they take care of their families, they are, you know, they're very strong in their faith. And when you look at that, those are core values of America. And we need to figure out a pathway, and it starts with securing the border to bring folks out so that they can work here legally, not become citizens, other than the path we have right now. But our immigration policy will never be fixed until we secure our southern border. I'm convinced of that.
Well, and there are other costs involved of that on that population that is not here paying all the taxes that they should be and living legally under the system. The court decisions have said, you know, schools are required to educate these youngsters that are here, whether they're here legally or not. There are other drains on our system because the tax dollars are not coming from those people that are here illegally.
Well, and, you know, if you start looking at our immigration needs to change from where it was back in the early 1900s, which was to bring people here because we had a thriving economy. We had an economy that needed unskilled workers, whether it was working in the steel mills, working in building the railroads. You can go on and look generationally. You know, the Irish built a lot of the railroads. The Italians built a lot of the railroads. They needed large blocks of people to come in, so those were solicited and they were brought in. But what's happened is we're shipping a lot of the skill sets we need now are being not being educated with its high tech, and so we're allowing these folks to be educated in America and take those job skills back to their countries, and then we're paying monies out of America back to India, back to Japan, back to China, folks that are educated in the United States with our great education system, but we don't have the ability to keep those kind of jobs here. So we need to work on a lot of things when it comes to the whole metrics of our education process, where our jobs are going. We've become a huge, we don't really produce a lot here anymore from tangible assets. Most of those produced abroad because of labor costs. And, you know, so going back to your original comments about minimum wage, this whole society is changing where what used to be the high wages were given in the manufacturing industries, a lot of benefits, middle class thrive. Today, that's gone. While President Trump's trying to bring it back, it's gone currently. And so the society is looking at, we need to get that out of the service industry, and the economic model just doesn't work.
And I will comment, just because I think anybody that's been to Ellis Island can see the displays, even turn of the century, we turned away as many, if not more, than we accepted at Ellis Island. So that system was working then. We got about a minute and a half left, Kevin. I want to make sure that people have the opportunity to find out, you know, about you, your website, your campaign, so that when they see that you're going to be at a campaign event in the area, they'll know who you are and what they can find out more about. You have a website? Yeah.
Sure. Hearn for Congress, H-E-R-N for Congress.com. We're out in a lot of events in Bartlesville, usually about every 10 days in the Bartlesville area, or go to the RVS Forum quite a bit, so I give a big shout-out to them. But many other events as well, parades, church events, veterans events, so it's been great. The message has been very well received. People know that you can't just say, well, we're going to get folks off the federal government. We have to have jobs first so that they have a place to support, because, you know, jobs are important. They're important for your integrity. They give you family values, and it's a great thing to pass on to your next generation. But, Charlie, as always, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and the citizens in your listening area. So I'd love to do this again very soon.
Okay, well, I don't know the calendar, but I know that we have something else scheduled, or if not, we'll be happy to schedule it with you. Thank you so much for your time, and look forward to a face-to-face visit next time that you're on the air. Kevin Hearn with us this morning on AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1, and a quick check of the forecast just ahead of news around the state of Oklahoma from the Oklahoma News Network. We do have a chance for some morning rain, about a 20% chance, and a high temperature later on around 89, 5 minutes before 9 o'clock at K1.
From the ONN, I'm Sean Carey. A lawsuit has been filed in the state Supreme Court challenging yet another